I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Right now, we're pleased to welcome CBS NFL insider Jason LaCanfora. And Jason, I want to start with what's been the biggest story in football the last week. We found out that Larry Ogunjobi will not get his suspension reduced. He will have to serve one game. Myles Garrett had his appeal with the NFL on Wednesday, and he's trying to use precedent to get his indefinite suspension reduced. What's your sense of how the mediators might handle his case as well as Maurkice Pouncey's?
Yeah, I think the one result we know may end up sort of being a template for what's to come. This is the kind of situation that nobody wants to see in the NFL, not the league, not the union, and not, you know, Derek Brooks, James Thrash, guys who adjudicate these things for a living. That's not what anybody wants to see. I think the league sent a really strong signal immediately in the way the suspensions were handed out. And then in my conversations with Troy Vincent over the weekend going through it, you know, he said, Myles Garrett, that's an easy decision, Jason. He's like, that can't happen. We don't need to see a player who does that on the football field for the rest of the year. And knowing James Thrash a little bit, having covered him when he was on the Redskins, and I covered the team for the Washington Post about 15 years ago, and spending time with James and kind of knowing how his mind works and the kind of thoughtful person he is, and how much he cares about the game and the integrity of the game, I tend to think that he's going to be up the mind as well, that, you know, that there's no place for that. And as for Pouncey, you know, could it be lowered from three games? I don't know, perhaps, but I also know that those two teams play each other again in 2 weeks, and, you know, having someone that combustible back in that game maybe doesn't make sense.
I thought it was interesting how quickly the NFL reacted. Not even 24 hours later, we already have the suspensions handed down, almost like the league was trying to control the narrative or shape it as much as possible, knowing that the video of this brawl was going to go viral and being a huge conversation even outside of sports.
Yeah, and really, you know, the way Troy explained it to me was that there were four sort of principles who were at the heart of what transpired there. Four players who faced the specter of, you know, in real time doing things that may be, you know, ejectable and or suspendable. So they spent the first 24 hours after that game focused on dissecting what those individuals did, how egregious any infractions were, and sort of, you know, looking at those actions, not the result. You know, Myles Garrett ended up hitting Mason Rudolph with the padded part of his helmet. You know, that's what the result, but the action was he swung it wildly. If he caught him with any other part of that helmet, he probably splits his head wide open. So they wanted to assess that first, Amy, because you could be looking, it's suspension that affects the roster, and you want those teams to have as much time as possible to start making contingencies, especially the Browns, who could be without multiple defensive linemen for a period of time based on the position groups. And then once they sorted that out, it's looking at the fines of everybody who left the sidelines, any coach, any player who did anything that you know, runs afoul of the game. And trust me, they've got 29 different camera angles to look at to sort all that out.
As a former NFL player recently said to me, the eye in the sky does not lie. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Jason LaCanfora, CBS NFL insider, spending a few minutes with us. Also over the weekend, the Colin Kaepernick workout, kind of murky, the details. We've got one side saying one thing, the other side saying the other thing. What's your reaction to how the whole thing played out, Jason?
I just think it's unfortunate that it was that messy, and it was, you know, it devolved the way it did, and it sort of became a battle of lawyers. I'm not surprised. You know, I guess it's to be expected when there is so little trust between these sides and there's so much trepidation and they're looking at each other with such jaundiced eyes, and they've been through, you know, these legal battles already. And I can understand Colin Kaepernick being scarred, and he has to protect himself, and his lawyers have to protect him. And you have to go over every, you know, every word with a fine tooth comb. And I think, you know, from the league standpoint, they feel like they extended themselves for Colin in a way they haven't anybody else. But I also think the way they approached him, the lack of a bedside manner, dropping it on him out of nowhere, you know, not really on, you know, sort of, I think, doing it in a way where it might have curried a little more favor or made it a little more inclusive. It was just very bizarre. It was out of the blue. The timing of it was always odd. And unfortunately, I think the end result is that not much is going to change for Colin Kaepernick. Teams were not actively, seriously pursuing him before Tuesday when this dropped out of the blue. And I don't foresee anyone doing it after the fact.
The Kaepernick camp wanted the venue change because the NFL wouldn't allow media or fans to be part of the workout. I had no idea that was actually something that the NFL allowed when players worked out. But I could be wrong, Jason. So what do we need to know about how this happened?
This whole thing is unprecedented. I mean, the league is not in the business of scheduling workouts, which became abundantly clear with all the issues that Colin's team rightfully brought up. And it's things that the NFL's football operations staff just don't normally do. And the guys at the scouting combine, they do a lot of stuff, but NFL veteran tryouts in the middle of a season at a team facility under sort of the umbrella of all that's going on between Kaepernick and the league and how unprecedented all this is, it was new terrain for everybody. And to think that they were going to get on the same page in 5 days in the middle of a season and get all this off the ground with no issues whatsoever, you know, in Atlanta on a Saturday, it just always struck me as probably a bridge too far, and ultimately it was.
The whole thing is just murky and mysterious, and I'm not sure a lot of people understand, including me, so thank you for the additional details. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Let's talk about some stuff on the field, shall we? As I was thinking about Week 11, and it dawned on me this past weekend, Jason, what a difference a year can make. So Lamar Jackson took over for the Ravens a year ago this week. Alex Smith had his very devastating broken leg a year ago. The Steelers were on top of the AFC North. Cam Newton and the Panthers were in a great position, only then to have to deal with a year's worth of his injury. So a year can make a mountain of difference in the NFL. As you look back over the last 12 months, what's the most significant change in the league, in your opinion?
I mean, I think you have some positive and negative. I mean, the Chargers last year were starting to charge and starting to live up to their talent and, you know, ended up 12-4 with some really nice wins and looked like they were trending in the right direction. And right now, if you ask me about the Chargers, my biggest question would be, you know, is Phillip Rivers even going to be a part of their future? You know, the Browns from a year ago where Freddie Kitchens is just starting to call plays and Greg Williams has taken over for Hugh Jackson, and they're about to go 5-2 to finish the season, and then Kitchens becomes head coach. To spin that forward to where we are now, where people are wondering if they can salvage their season at the same point they were a year ago. You know, it's just things happen so fast. But I think how many teams sustain with their backup quarterbacks this year, and then just the continued infusion of young quarterbacks. You know, Arizona at this time last year, we're already kind of fed up with Josh Rosen. Kyler Murray's not perfect just yet, but you watch him on a regular basis, he does a lot of things that make you say that, you know, once they really kind of polish up that diamond, he could be really special. Obviously, Lamar Jackson has been phenomenal. You know, Deshaun Watson is still, what, 24, 25 years old. You know, what he does on a daily basis. I just think it's a really exciting time for the league as we see some of these youngsters kind of really find their sea legs and now start, you know, they're among the best of the best.
That's a great point. We're seeing the average age of starting quarterback plummet in the NFL. Jason LaCanfora with us here After Hours, CBS Sports Radio. Jason, one of the places where there's a young quarterback who seemingly had all kinds of promise, but now has hit a bit of a snag is Chicago and Mitch Trubisky. His head coach, Matt Nagy, is firm in his support of this young QB. He says that he's behind him and that he's going to be the starter moving forward. How much stock do you put in that support and those answers?
Well, he's committed because he has to be committed because the GM moved up to get this guy. in the draft when nobody else in the top five was even thinking about it. And he outsmarted himself, and he passed on Mahomes and Watson to do it, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. But, I mean, Nagy was with Chase Daniel in Kansas City. There were people telling me last October that, hey, you know, if you really watch these two on a daily basis, Chase Daniel could run the offense better than Trubisky. And even when they were winning with Trubisky last year, it was because they were always playing with a lead. The defense played out of its mind. The schedule and injuries all worked to their favor. And Trubisky, he was great on the first 15-play script, and then they'd have a big enough lead that they could just squat on it. You know, he didn't have to carry a team. He could just be along for the ride. And this year, he's not really even able to do that. And I think he's had a crisis of confidence. You know, I think Nagy will do just enough to kind of be aligned to him. But in the offseason, there's going to be big questions to be asked. I don't think Trubisky's going anywhere. They have too much invested in him. You know, that they want to see this through. But I think it'll be like the Marcus Mariota situation of the past offseason, where he's still there, but, man, he's on a short leash. And the backup is a guy who's won games in the league before as a starter, not a career backup like a Chase Daniel.
For the past year plus, we've been hearing the phrase tank for Tua around teams that potentially could be selecting a quarterback in the upcoming draft. Now he suffered the devastating hip injury, and though it sounds like he could make a full recovery, what ripple effects will that injury have when it comes to the NFL?
Yeah, it's obviously unfortunate. He's a great kid with a magnetic personality, and I've heard nothing positive things about him through, you know, the college scouting community. And obviously, you know, Nick Saban and the Alabama program thinks the world of him. He suffered through a fair amount of injuries at a young age. So, I mean, is that part of the narrative? Yes. Where will he be physically, by March, April, May, you know, leading into the draft and right after the draft? How much activity would he be cleared for in the spring if you do draft him? You know, those are questions that we don't know the answer to right now. And depending on how he heals, there may be a case to be made for going and using that last year of eligibility and using the world-class weight room and facilities, rehab facilities at Alabama, and having a kind of a redshirt year. And if he plays a little bit, great. If he doesn't, really, there's nothing else he needs to show on a college football field. It would just be about being as healthy as possible to position himself best to get drafted in the highest slot possible. So right now, there's more unknown than known. But he has a tremendous work ethic. He is optimistic to a fault. If anybody has the mindset to pull through this, it's him. But this is a significant injury, and they're going to have to be really smart about the rehab and recovery process.
Yeah, certainly his rehab, his recovery, and his physical well-being are the most important things right now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence and Jason Lockenfors, CBS NFL Insider here on CBS Sports Radio. Okay, so last thing. It blows me away that as other sports leagues have to deal with waning TV ratings, the NFL continues to grow and increase its profile, and also now seeing the ratings rebound even more than they did a year ago. Why is it that the NFL is the only league able to buck the trend, Jason?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just an insatiable appetite for football. I mean, people have said it's the perfect television sport. You know, it's played on a grid, the gridiron, the TV is a grid. The technology is better than ever. The gambling component is bigger than ever. I think fantasy football, no one in the league office 20 years ago, if you would have told them that fantasy would be one of their biggest revenue generators, I just don't think anybody would have thought it would have blown up the way it has. It's become the national pastime, and it's stronger than ever. And really, I mean, once they get this collective bargaining agreement done, and I bet that happens in early 2020, then you're going to secure new TV deals if they do this 17-game season. And I wouldn't rule that out. You're talking about more international games. You might be talking about games in December in Tuscaloosa or at Notre Dame with Touchdown Jesus. And what does that do for people? And that's a one-of-a-kind experience, and I want to go to that game, and I want to be a part of that. I think the business of football is booming, and if they take care of business on the CBA and these broadcast deals and with the influx of gambling money, sponsors, coming in, and we're going to have a football Taj Mahal in Vegas, and we're going to have a football Taj Mahal in Inglewood, California. I think the business of football is going to be booming for a while.
It is the best reality show on TV. We can't get enough. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason Lockhand for CBS NFL Insider. You can see him every Sunday morning on the NFL Today on CBS. It's great to catch up with you. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes.
My pleasure. Have a great night.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Set on a counter, gives off to Marlon Mack, cuts up field, patient run, spins out of a tackle, still going, he's at the 10, he's at the 5, looking for the pylon, and he is in, touchdown Marlon Mack, the best run you'll see all year, the Colts are in, it's 7-6 with a 13-yard run from Marlon Mack.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Matt Taylor on the Colts Radio Network. Colts and Texans will start out week 12 on Thursday Night Football. I don't see them erupting into a brawl in the final 8 seconds. That seems kind of out of character for those two teams, not to mention their roots and their hatred. We're talking sports hatred here. Don't run as deep, but it is an AFC South divisional rivalry. It's important because they're both 6-4 and right now tied atop the division, though the Colts have this initial tiebreaker until, of course, they face off again. And we'll find out on Thursday night if that remains the same. Right. So a ton of you are weighing in about why you pay more attention to the NFL or why you continue to consume the NFL, whereas other sports maybe you're not interested in. But the numbers for the NBA national games to start the season have been way down. So I won't give you specific numbers because they're kind of random if you don't have context, but the NBA on TNT, that's a Thursday night national doubleheader. The ratings to start out the season have all been way down. In fact, the games continue to draw fewer than 1 million viewers. We're talking a nationally televised game. Fewer than 1 million viewers. In fact, 6 straight at one point that attracted fewer than 1 million viewers on the NBA on TNT. Now, you throw in some of the national broadcasts on ESPN, another one of the NBA's partners, and already 9 games this season, and actually these numbers are a bit dated. They go back maybe a week or a week and a half ago. 9 games have already failed to crack 1 million viewers. To give it some context, all of last season, there were only 19 nationally televised games on those two networks that did not attract at least 1 million viewers. So we're already at 9 just a month or so into the current season. And this continues a trend. You remember last year's NBA Finals, maybe it was fatigue with the Golden State Warriors being in it again. But regardless, whatever the reasons, the finals were way down. You had a brand new winner, and the finals were off almost 15%. The ratings were down most of last season. So why is it that the NFL's ratings continue to climb and to rebound in pretty amazing ways? 855-212-4227. It's our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's talk to Matt, who's in Oregon. Matt, what do you think?
Hey, what an honor to speak to you, Amy. My thoughts on this is that, you know, we live in a binge-watching society nowadays where you have everything at your fingertips, and if you're a basketball fan or a hockey fan or a baseball fan, there's a gazillion games a year. And if you miss one, you know, it's no big deal. But the NFL is scarce. You know, it happens once a week for your team. And then there's, you know, the one game on Thursday, the one game on Monday. But it's like an absence makes the heart grow fonder type thing where, you know, you can't binge watch it anytime you want, any day of the week. It's only that one time a week. And then they take it away from you for a week. And then you have to just wait for it. There's all this buildup and all this talk about it. It builds it up, so you're just hyped up for the next episode, the next weekend. So that's why my thoughts are on why the NFL is doing so well and the other sports aren't, is just because you know, it's just too available. All of the other sports are far too available.
So you don't think it's anything to do with the competition, with the superstars? You don't think it's anything to do with what we're seeing on the field? It's just the fact that, it's supply and demand.
I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, like, when you were talking about how miserable the basketball ratings were, I mean, basketball went for several years in a row where everybody knew who was going to be in the finals before the season even started. Everyone knew it was going to be Cleveland and Golden State, you know? And so that really kind of takes all the interest out of it, you know? And, like, in hockey, you know, to go up against that point, in hockey you never know who's going to be in the finals because of just the nature of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Okay, but if you want to compare ratings, Matt, the NHL barely registers compared to the NBA, and obviously the NFL is got so many more viewers. I understand what you're saying about the NHL and its competition, but it doesn't mean that people are watching it on TV.
That's right, and that's why I think it all goes back to scarcity. That was kind of me disproving the competition part of it. So I just think it comes down to the scarcity part of it is that, you know, you get once a week at it, and, you know, you don't get a chance to go back and watch it because once you found out who won anyway, it's not like you're going to DVR that and watch it later. So.
Although the NFL Network does replay all of these games, like all week long, that's all they do. So people must be watching them on replays.
Well, you know that, or they're just filling up, you know, time. I mean, the NFL's been struggling to get ratings for the Pro Bowl for however many years. And my always thought with the Pro Bowl was if you move that to, like, April, when people are football starved and they're hungry, oh, you'd see huge ratings for the Pro Bowl if you move it to the middle of the offseason.
Interesting. I wouldn't watch it. I still barely acknowledge it, but I'm glad that you would be interested. Thank you, Matt, for your phone call. It's good to talk to you.
Bye-bye.
That's interesting theory from Matt. The plethora of games in the NBA and the NHL. So that could be part of it. But if you really love your team and you really love the sport, aren't you thrilled to have more of the games? So essentially what he's saying is you're spreading out viewership because it's not must-see TV. Although the NFL is definitely available more than just Sundays. And in fact, they're about to start playing Saturday games. When college football wraps up its regular season, you start to see Saturday games as well. So they use as many days of the week as they can get away with, to be sure. Let's see, a couple of comments on Facebook before we take our break. Brandon says it's a comedy, it's drama, action, political, and most of all, it's every week. Joe says fantasy football, plain and simple. But there are fantasy games that you can play for other sports as well. Kevin says, I just love football, period. Alton says on Facebook, it seems like the NFL has overtaken baseball as our national pastime, and I just like watching it. Yeah, you don't necessarily have to have a reason. If you love the NFL, you love the NFL, and you really can't get enough of it. I think it's interesting that Alton says that because that's exactly what we got from Jason LaCanfora a few minutes ago. He said the NFL is now America's national pastime. Rob on Facebook, with the other major sports, there is almost an oversaturation of games. Fewer games equals greater consequence for each loss or more gain for each victory. All right, so lots of great comments on our Facebook page. Also on Twitter, A-Law Radio, we'll get to some of those. And we've got some good phone calls on the air. Well, I'm having faith that they're going to be good phone calls. We'll get to those as well. 855-212-4227, plus this problem that you have got to help me with. I'm serious. I'm at my wit's end.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's good to see Scott Farrell back here at CBS Sports Radio on Wednesday evening. I needed a couple days off for some tough family stuff, and he and his wife and his kids have been going through a lot, so it was good to see him again here. And I know now he's off to Las Vegas. That man never stays in one place very long. If you don't know Scott, you should check out his show. It's right before ours here on CBS Sports Radio. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, and you're finding me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. We're asking you, why do you continue to watch the NFL with a voracious appetite? Why the NFL and not other sports? Nick says the way the NBA players run the league with their high-profile diva selves. Diva selves. It makes it hard to follow more and more. They dictate where they play. All these one and one contracts they sign nowadays. They cry when they don't get their way. It's just too much anymore. I don't know. We had some pretty high-profile NFL players demand trades in the last year or so. Okay, so you can weigh in, and we're going to get right back to your calls, but I've been teasing this, so I have to tell you what's going on. And I really need some help. I'm not kidding. Sometimes I tell you these stories, and I'm not actually looking for advice. Now I'm looking for advice. Back in August, like August, as in 3 months ago, a construction crew came and put a gigantic orange roadwork sign in my yard. It's huge. I'm almost 6 foot tall. It's another one and a half of me. It is so tall and it's so bright. The orange on the sign reflects on the inside of my living room. But regardless of that, it's annoying. It's tall and it's ugly and it's in my front yard and it's been there for 3 months. And here's the thing. The work's been done for a month and the sign still sits there. Now, those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis know that patience is not my virtue. I'm not a patient person. I will readily admit it's something that I've been working on my entire life. A lot better now than I used to be. Not something I'm great at. But I don't get it. I feel like I've been patient enough. The sign's been sitting there for 3 months. I have to mow around it. I have to do yard work around it. So here's what I'm asking. Will I go to jail if I take it out myself? The thing is huge. So my property manager, I don't own the house, I rent the house. My property manager has apparently reached out to the public works department in my town. The public works department probably has part-time employees. It's not a large town that I live in. And she's getting no response. So this has been 3 weeks now of her trying to reach out to the public works department. She volunteered to do that. She suggested to me, call the police department. I responded, aren't they going to laugh at me? I'm going to call the police department to ask them about the giant sign in my yard. I feel like the police department must have something better to do with its time. I'm sure it does. Far more concerning things. In fact, I would have to apologize. Please, officer, please forgive me for being an idiot and bothering you with this problem. So I've told her I'm going to try to take it out myself. No, it's a huge sign. I'm not kidding you. It's really big. So I may not be able to take it out. It's got those bolts on the bottom of the sign legs, and they're probably plunged like 5 feet into the ground. Think about the holes it's leaving in my yard. But that's not even the point. I get it. If you want to tell people that there's road work coming up, but the sign was in my yard a month before the road work happened. The road work took place. It's now been a month, and the sign is still there, and it's so annoying. It's driving me crazy. Why can't I take it out? Although it then dawned on me, what do I do with the sign? After I take it out, what do I do with it? Do I stash it? We have woods nearby. Do I throw it in the woods? And then what happens in August of 2020 when they come looking for their stupid sign? What do I say? I guess I could fill up the holes and pretend like it was never there. Wait, what sign? Or you know how sometimes people, they're texting and driving or they're driving drunk and they run into signs. I could pretend like that happened. Oh, I'm sorry. Someone took out the sign. No, seriously. That thing can't just sit there because they don't feel like coming back and getting it. I can't be the only person in the history of the world who's ever removed a sign from his or her own front yard. So if you have any experience with this, or if you know what I should do, because maybe you think I'm an idiot too, but seriously, how long is the sign supposed to sit there? It's not like a little bitty stop sign or a house for sale sign. No, the thing is huge.
It's really unfair.
It's very unfair. And I know life is not fair, but it's been a month. Since the work was over, it's been a month, and the sign has been in my damn yard for 3 months. 3 months. Why my yard? I just...
I'm sorry.
I wish I had LeBron James to help me take the sign out. I feel like throwing a temper tantrum, but that's not going to help. So someone please help me. If you're in law enforcement, it's fine. You don't have to write me and say, don't call the police department. Because I feel like they'd probably laugh at me anyway, and I'd be embarrassed to do that. But if you work in construction or a public works department, please tell me what I should do. And if you think I'll get in trouble if I remove the sign myself. I don't even know if I can remove the sign myself. I have muscles, but I don't know if I have those kind of muscles. Probably not by myself. I'm going to have to get a partner in crime. I've walked the line before. It's one particular ticket I refuse to pay, and they haven't caught up with me yet. Hello, Boston. I feel dangerous. I just want this sign out of my yard. Okay. Please help me. Please, please help me. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm only laughing so I don't cry. 855-212-4227. Doug is listening in Atlanta. Doug, welcome to After Hours.
Amy, I think the best combination is a beautiful woman talking sports is comment one. Comment two.
You can't see me, man. I'm doing a radio show.
But you can see you on, you know, Facebook and social media.
That's why I wish I could get rid of those things. Okay, anyway, I'll take that as a compliment. Thanks. Go ahead.
Two, I think the reason, or at least for myself, the NFL popularity, fantasy football. I'm watching games that I would never watch because I want to see what Amari Cooper does. And three, I know you're in the Northeast, but
that has nothing to do with anything.
The second sport is growing is college football.
What does that have to do with me being in the Northeast? I talk college football, man.
Well, you know, what teams do you have up there that are like?
It has nothing to do with up here. I've lived all over the country, and I have a national radio show. It's not about where I'm located.
No, I know. I'm just saying that. I wanted to hear your opinion on, like, should the playoffs be more than four teams or just more conversations
about
the rankings and, you know, college football, basically.
I like the four teams, and I know that's an unpopular opinion, but I think, to me, the four teams makes every game relevant. So we're talking about the NFL and how there are only 16 games in a regular season, and that every single one of them carries major implications. Well, I feel that way about college football. I like the four-team playoff because I think it doesn't automatically include every conference champ. I don't think you should be automatically included just because you're a conference champ, because some of the conferences are not as difficult or as competitive as others. I like the fact. I mean, you know, it's a committee, but we have a committee for March Madness, too, and it's different. To be perfectly honest, this is one reason why I prefer pro sports, is because you are what your record says you are, and there's no committee or debate about whether or not you make the playoffs. You make the playoffs if your record says you're good enough to make the playoffs. College football is a big business, and it's really popular, and adding at least a four-team playoff has made a big difference because the conversation is there for these last 6 weeks. You know, what about the rankings? What does this mean? And I mean, I think it's a little melodramatic, but that's part of the deal. That's why they reveal the rankings for these 6 weeks leading up to the final playoff ones.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a playoff system going on right now, you know, Auburn, Alabama, and LSU, maybe Georgia, and Utah and Oregon,
Ohio State, Penn State,
you know, so, I mean, you're right. It's the playoffs have started.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the deal. That's why the conference presidents, why the conferences themselves want to keep it to four teams, and why they have signed a contract for four teams, because they like the fact that every game and every week is relevant, and you can't dismiss your non-conference games or your cream puffs and things like that. That every win is important, every loss is important. So I appreciate that, Doug. Thanks so much. Now, it's interesting that people would say to me that it's gambling, because I don't gamble, so admittedly, I don't have a reference with this. But do you need to watch the games? If you gamble on the outcome, do you actually need to sit and watch the games? You don't, right? You could just find out the result and know whether you won or lost. Or does that add to the drama of it? Is that what makes your heart pound and your blood boil and... if you're watching it unfold and then you think the sport is rigged because you lost money, maybe that's the whole excitement of it. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.